Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FTSE Russell Convene series. Today, I'm joined by Michael Brandt, professor at Duke University Fuqua School of Business. He'll be talking about financial market imbalances and their impact on markets. Follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Welcome, Michael. I'm so glad that you're joining us in this session. Why don't we start off by talking about your career journey, what brought you till this moment, and your key research interests at this point?
Sure. Thank you for having me. Yes, I started my career back in the late 90s on strategic and tactical asset allocation problems. And my work had been very methodological, looking at techniques for circumventing some of the issues that we had documented with mean variance optimizer. So realizing that if you have noisy inputs, you end up with even more noisy portfolio weights that then need to be constrained and perhaps shrunk to some extent. So over the years, as I was working with investors on their processes, my research interest shifted from trying to help with methodology to trying to understand what kind of information leads an investor to wanting to shift their strategic or tactical asset allocation. And rather than some of my colleagues who would take sort of a top-down approach, trying to think about how portfolio weights and returns might vary from one quarter to the next or 1 month to the next, I wanted to take a micro approach and start from the bottom, thinking about changes in beliefs as being an accumulation of daily information. And that's daily information that may be public, such as public economic news, or it might be just observations of markets and market activity. And so that led me to two distinct research agendas. In one, I'm looking at nowcasting, where I'm collecting the daily flow of information about the macroeconomy and construct point-in-time forecasts of where we are in terms of output, inflation, labor, and macro sentiment. On the other hand, I've been studying the relationship between order flow imbalances and specifically inflows and outflows into broad asset markets and the impact of those on returns and thinking about whether or not that we're really looking at more of a microstructure problem or a broader, much broader phenomenon where inflows into asset classes actually have large significant price impacts. Finally, I'm combining the two. So I've been working on trying to think about how does the information about the economy evolve and can we simultaneously observe within asset markets rebalancings that reflect that change in information. So the classic example might be something like a portfolio rebalance around a sector rotation strategy, whereas the information shifts from being strong economy with strong growth to being perhaps weaker growth. Investors shift their portfolios from more aggressive stances to lower beta, more defensive sectors. And that's exactly what we see in the data, that order flow imbalances reflect that sort of rebalancing activity.
That's fascinating. So, given the current market environment, people are obviously very concerned about financial market imbalances, what's leading to those imbalances and impact, and you have done so much research on this. So let's talk about some key imbalances and how you see them really impacting markets. Where should people be really concerned to?
Start from the basics of trying to think about what's different about an asset class versus a single stock. So in a single stock, we understand that if investors are buying or selling the stock, that activity may embed information. And so therefore, prices move for a reason. The price, that information is being incorporated into the prices. I'm thinking more about asset classes, and I think of those as more as public information sort of assets that most of us can see all the information that's relevant for pricing an asset broadly, what the interest rate might be, what the currency value might be. It's hard to think about individuals as having private information about broad asset classes. And so what I've been studying is the role of order flow imbalances in these broad asset classes. And what we find is that it is just as strong as when you look at individual stocks. So that if you have large order flow imbalances, large extra capital flowing into a given asset class, we start seeing the market capitalization of those asset classes appreciating by orders of maybe a factor of, let's say, 8, which means that if I have $100 million of capital flowing into the S&P index, the S&P index appreciates by $800 million in market capitalization. That's one of the empirical findings from the paper I will present tomorrow.
That's very interesting. So talking about the time frame, like, do all these things have an impact immediately? Is it a medium term? Is it long term? And has that changed now that nowcasting is becoming much more common? Many of the Federal Reserve banks are doing it. So because even if people don't have the actual readings, but they have a nowcast reading, does the time horizon of the impact change?
what you would expect to observe from the microstructure view that we sort of think about from the single stock is that these effects are first short-lived, stronger at very short horizon, so at the immediate trade horizon. When the trader comes to the market maker, that's when we expect to see prices move the most, and then dissipate or maybe even revert, because in a classical market microstructure model, it's short-term mean reversion that is the compensation for providing liquidity. We see exactly the opposite in these broad macro markets. The effect gets stronger the longer the horizon is. So we accumulate order flow imbalances not just over hours, but over days, weeks, and ultimately months. And the correlation between order flow imbalances and contemporaneous returns becomes stronger the longer the horizon is that we're looking at. And the effect is permanent. So even if you look out as far as a couple of quarters, it does not mean revert. So it's really just an inflow of capital that leads to a permanent change in capitalization of an asset class. One of the contributions of our paper is that we look very broadly across different asset classes. So equity indices, bonds, and rate futures. We looked at commodities, currencies, and even looked at VIX and Bitcoin. And regardless of which asset class you look at, the effect is very similar. To this question of timing, what we observe is not so much of a time trend, but rather cyclical behavior. And in fact, there is a very common structure across all these different asset classes to the cyclical behavior of how sensitive markets are to inflows and outflows. There are years in our historical data where the sensitivity is very low and other years where markets have become very, very sensitive. But there's a strong common component. Roughly 60% of core variation is explained by just one principal component. So there's something going on. We don't quite know what it is yet and what's driving it, but it'll be important to understand going forward.
It's super interesting that the impact at the asset class level is actually stronger at the longer horizon. That's fascinating. So let's tie back to one of our indices in the Russell family for the U.S. capitalization. So the Russell 1000 for the large cap, Russell 2000 for the small cap. Any insights on financial market imbalances that might have had a permanent or a long-term impact on the performance of these two indices in recent years?
It's sort of a question of volatility and market cap, and ultimately the volatility of order flow imbalances that you see from day to day. And there's some markets that we look at that are very balanced over time. And then others that see very systematic inflows and outflows, particularly over courses of quarters and business cycles. So there's sort of two pieces to the order flow and balance story. One is seasonal rebalancing. So this is kind of the classic story of an investor who holds a 60-40 benchmark portfolio, and every quarter or every year or every so often has to rebalance back to policy weights. Because relative performance has sort of driven you away from equilibrium. That generates very predictable order flow imbalances at certain calendar points. The second is more seasonal and related to business cycles. And that very much would affect your small caps much differently than it would just a broad-based large cap index, where you might see very systematic inflows and outflows at different turning points of what I think of as people changing their minds about where we're heading in the near term or the medium term in terms of the economy.
What implications does it have for the optimal frequency and timing for portfolio construction, portfolio rebalancing?
Part of it is avoiding the big flows. So if I am rebalancing a portfolio, and I'm just balancing back to my policy weights, I probably don't want to do it at the same time as I might know. So the aggregate industry does. I might want to stagger it through a longer period as opposed to waiting for my ultimate decision period at the end of a quarter or end of a year. So just being aware of the fact that there is a broader set of market participants who might follow very similar strategies, in this case a very passive, uninformed strategy, we're just rebalancing the market caps, that yet has an important impact on prices. The other is trying to understand transaction costs, because this is ultimately a contributor to transaction cost. And so knowing that whether the markets that you're trading in are currently in a state in which an inflow or an outflow has a more significant impact than other times is going to be important to modeling transaction costs over time.
Absolutely. So taking a slightly longer view, all these issues that you talked about, would you say from the asset allocation perspective, Are they more important in the tactical asset allocation or in the strategic asset allocation space?
I think they're important for both. They're important for the tactical asset allocators because transaction cost is critical to harvesting returns. And they're important to the strategic asset allocators because they're exactly the type of investors that are generating that seasonal sort of almost predictable rebalancing. You just watch the financial news, and inevitably at the end of every quarter, you'll see news stories come up where somebody predicts how much an asset class is going to move because there's going to be a predictable inflow outflow from a particular type of investor. And pension plans rebalancing to their strategic benchmarks is a very common example of a manager that might do that.
Can you touch upon the issue of correlated strategies and where capital flows are happening right now and what does it tie into these imbalances and,
Yeah, the thing about transaction costs that I've always found fascinating is that when we model a transaction cost, we think about it as the cost of rebalancing my portfolio. But if my portfolio behaves very similarly to other managers' portfolios at the same time, which can easily happen because we're processing the same signals. Really, I need to start thinking more about the portfolio, the price impact of that broad set of transactions, which all are going in the same direction. And so correlated strategies, understanding how correlated my strategy is with the broader strategies is very important because it tells me how is my flow going to be amplified into a much broader flow that then has a much larger price impact, much larger than what my individual transaction cost model might suggest. So again, going back to kind of the popular financial news, you might see very frequently stories about trend followers, for example, getting to a point where they're flipping their portfolios from being long equities to being short equities, thereby generating a very large flow. It's not that any of the managers is going to produce a very large flow, but as a group, using highly correlated signals, their transactions end up generating a very large flow and thereby contemporaneous price impact.
You raised a very interesting point about being aware of how much one's own strategy is correlated with others in the market. But any deep in the weeds information on how to best get that estimate of how correlated somebody's strategy is to everything else happening in the market?
I don't have one, but I have a reverse argument, which is that if you see that your trades have price impacts which are significantly larger than what your price impact model might predict, it most likely is going to be the outcome of correlated strategies trading at the same time as you're trading as well. One way that you might see that happening in real time is you have a trade that you start at the beginning of the day, and as you continue to execute it, use a VWAP strategy, for example, the price just keeps moving against you all day long. Most likely, it's not a market maker detecting that you're in there trading as much as everybody else in the market trading the same correlated signals in the same direction, and thereby creating a market impact that is much larger than what you'd anticipated ex ante your market impact to be.
That was super insightful, Michael. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you very much.